I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
And you're back listening to the Functional Nerds podcast on NPR.
I was going to say we should do something like, you know, welcome back to WFNP Functional Nerds.
KFJ Los Angeles.
Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
Welcome everybody. This is our special Just the Two of Us episode for December? January? I don't know when it's going to be. I think we have one in the can that needs to go up still, too. So
it's interesting because last night, I watched an old David Tennant. It's kind of funny to say old David Tennant. A David Tennant episode of Doctor Who, just because I was in the mood. So I'm in that timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly kind of, you know, brain space right now. And we're recording a timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly episode that we don't know exactly yet where it's going to go. It could go in December. It might go in January. I've been a little bit behind, and Arizona kicked my butt. And
it happens. Yeah. Life has. Well, at least we have some in the can. It's not like when we went on our unexpected hiatus where we just ran out of episodes for like three or four. But that's good. You know, it's funny. You mentioned, you know, watching the David Tennant episodes of Doctor Who. I almost, in this day and age, I almost never rewatch anything. It's once in a while, but very rarely do I be like, I'm going to watch Firefly again. I know people do that. I know people that have watched Firefly a million times. And I have nothing against that. I just always feel like, oh, there's so many things. Yeah. Like I haven't seen Breaking Bad yet, and I haven't seen this yet. And it's like, I always want to do something new. But what I have – I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. What you have.
What I have done this week is I went back and watched – a four-episode arc of the Clone Wars cartoon.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's the first time I've rewatched something in a while. Do you have any guess of which episodes I watched?
A four-episode arc.
Yes.
I'd have to think maybe the Darth Maul stuff on the planet of the Boba Fetts.
That is a very good guess. The episodes that I did watch actually are the from season 5, and it is the ones with Saw Gerrera, who is going to be making an appearance in Rogue One. As you may or may not know, that is a character that had a 4-episode arc on the Clone Wars.
Really?
So yes. So the character that Forrest Whitaker plays actually showed up as a you know, young man in his 20s during the Clone Wars. Do you recall those episodes?
I don't, and it's interesting because is season 5, so we're going to do a spoiler here right now for Clone Wars, okay? Because there's no way for me to ask this question or John to answer it without me spoiling a little bit of something. Is this before or after Ahsoka's incident?
Before.
This is before Ahsoka's incident,
yes.
where she has the stuff with Barif. Barriss. Okay, so this is before that. I don't remember this.
Okay, so the season 5 has probably the best episodes of the series.
I would agree with that, yeah.
And the worst, because it's a bunch of 3 and 4 episode arcs, which is usually how the Clone Wars ran. There were very few like just standalone episodes. They were usually arcs. And so it has that Ahsoka, you know, on trial, which I think is probably the best of almost any Star Wars thing at all. I think books, movies, what have you, I think that stands up with some of the best Star Wars stories that are out there. But it also has the droid commando.
That is a
4-episode arc.
Yeah, I know.
I have no idea how they stretched that into. I remember even watching them being like, oh my God, there's another, like if that was a 1-episode, ha ha ha, the droids.
No,
it's
they kept it going.
There was like the little alien that was like inside.
He was the tunnel.
He was like a general or
right,
something.
But he was a tunnel slug.
Yeah,
like
he was a little alien.
These were slugs that lived in the tunnels of the ships and stuff or something like that. They cleaned them or something. And he became a general.
Yeah, so it's, It's bad. But you kind of have to watch those too, because they do link them to the other episodes. So, but anyway, so the ones with Saul Guerrero, I think it's Guerrero. I believe that is the first, they're early in season five. They may be the first four episodes of season five, or you know,
I'm totally blanking.
And it is, they are on the planet Onderon, and it is the one, so they are, the Jedis go and train the, do you remember?
Yeah, so and there's the female leader.
Yes, the female leader is Saul Guerrero's sister.
So that's who he's playing?
Yes, that's Forrest Whitaker is that character. Oh, that's
interesting. Okay, now I remember what you're talking about. Yeah, and the kid from the kid that Ahsoka has the crush on.
Yes, is in Bon Terry, I think is his name.
And his mother had been killed by the separatists or something at some point. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so I would say if you're going to go watch Rogue One, go watch those episodes. They're on Netflix. I liked it better than I remember. I remember when I watched it, I'm like, yeah, this is an okay arc. It's fine. But now watching it and knowing that that's the character that Forrest Whitaker is going to play, and now that character has shown up a little bit in some of the books.
That's interesting.
It's cool. And that is a very Ahsoka-focused arc too, because Obi-Wan and Anakin and Rex are in like the first episode of that arc.
And then they leave.
It's basically Ahsoka, you know, sort of overseeing the sort of guerrilla warfare that they're conducting.
And they're teaching her at the same time, because she's like, she's not allowed to interfere. It's almost like a prime directive, right?
Yes.
It's like, we can't fight this war for them. We can't even be connected to this war.
Mm-hmm.
You can teach them. This is an experiment that we're going to try, but you can't fight the battles. You have to let them fight the battles. And it's very hard for her, having been Anakin's Padawan for four seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And Anakin is all about action, and let's do this, and let's get this done, and let's, you know, let's blow up this, and, you know, let's just go. You know, it's the what do they call it in the first in the Phantom Menace, the lightsaber negotiations or whatever they call it.
Aggressive negotiations.
Aggressive negotiations. Yeah, that's Anakin's whole thing, right? And now she has to fight that, and she has to contain herself, and it's very taxing on her.
Yeah. So I watched those and really dug it. And it really shows, I think, one of the nice things about how they're trying to sort of link little things here and there. And there's like little Easter eggs. We mentioned it. And they're like, you know, how there's like, you know, the ghost ship from shows up in the trailer for Rogue One trailer. And it's just, it's really nice that they're making all of these kind of connections. And especially if you're reading the books and the comics and you're watching, and then you go back to the Clone Wars and you're like, oh, that's cool. Yeah, that's the character. And I remember that for a while, and I'm like, yeah, check those out. And I didn't necessarily plan on watching all four episodes, but you know, it's a 22 minute or 23 minute, you know, animated show. You sit down to watch and you're like, yeah, watch the next one. Why not? Yeah. It's like, you know, they go quick, and the storytelling is pretty tight, and the animation holds up pretty well. It's just good, you know.
So, I recently just, it's that time of year, John, and you know, where you've got Star Wars on the mind, and you and I just talked about that. But it is Star Wars time of year, you know, because there's a new movie coming out. I just a couple of months ago, I introduced someone to Clone Wars who hadn't seen any of the Clone Wars. And they're like, oh, okay. So like, they're like, where should I start? And I'm like, well, just start with the Clone Wars movie, the animated one, because that's where Ahsoka is introduced. And a lot to me of the Clone Wars is about Ahsoka.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And you kind of see the Old Republic and the Jedi through Ahsoka.
Mm-hmm.
And through the things that happened to her and everything that she experiences. And so I'm like, you know, watch the Clone Wars movie. And they're like, okay. And then I said, then go on Netflix and start watching the Clone Wars TV show. And that got me to rewatch the whole thing. And I went all the way up to where Ahsoka's incident happens.
Okay.
And then I didn't go any further. There's like, I think one more season after that, maybe two.
There is, if that's the end of season five, there's a season six, which is only half a season. There's only like 10 episodes in season six.
At the end of season five, the actor who played Emperor Palpatine's voice had passed away.
Oh.
And so they still had some stuff that he recorded. And then they interjected Tim Curry,
right?
Tim Curry had a few lines here and there that they kind of interjected. So okay. It was kind of weird towards the end there. You would get a different voice in the same episode.
Oh, that's weird.
Occasionally. And then from then on, it was always Tim Curry after that.
Okay.
But yeah. But so that's kind of where that starts to happen. But the funny thing is, my friend still hasn't finished the Clone Wars movie.
Oh.
And I've already gone through all 5 seasons of Clone Wars. So, yeah. Here's an interesting thing that I don't know, and I don't even – we just kind of – you and I went on a tangent here about Star Wars and Clone Wars. I don't know if people understand that – the first couple of seasons of Clone Wars, the episodes are not in chronological order on purpose.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That can throw some people off.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's crazy, but yeah, there's a couple of times where they're like, oh yeah, this one actually takes like, so the very first episode is kind of supposed to be later in the timeline,
yeah.
Like significantly later. They do play around with that.
Yeah, subsequent episodes have events that build up to something that you've already seen.
Right, right.
And so, like, a lot of the stuff with the clones,
mm-hmm.
right? You have certain clones that are part of Anakin and Obi-Wan's squads.
Mm-hmm.
And as you're going through and you're learning more about them, suddenly you go back and now you see those clones as they're very first going into the clone training. And mm-hmm. then you have a couple of episodes of that. Mm-hmm. And then it comes back to their full-blown soldiers in the Republic's army and they're doing stuff. And then you kind of go back to their earlier days. And then it goes, you know, so you've got stuff like that happening. And that can throw some people if they're not prepared for it.
Yeah, yeah, you have to pay attention. You know, it's worth it. And really, when you think about it, it's the first ongoing exploration of those worlds where they really do get into the clones. And there's a couple of arcs that are focused almost entirely on the clones, and those are among the best episodes, I think. Mm-hmm. Those ones with where they. They're with the one Jedi that is going evil, the one with the four arms and has the four lightsabers.
Yeah,
that's a great one. That's a great run, and that's almost totally clone focused.
Yes, he does not see the clones as sentient.
Yes,
people.
Yes, right?
He sees them as just numbers.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. No, they really get into a lot of that stuff in the show, and it's really good.
It's also interesting. You know the ship that they end up stealing, the clones steal in those episodes and use to save like other clones?
Mm-hmm.
The game that I play on my iPhone, the Star Wars Galaxy of Heroes,
mm-hmm.
recently added ships.
Ooh.
So now you can have ship battles and you can have fleet battles and stuff. And that's one of the ships. If you have a clone trooper, you can get one of those ships.
Mm, yeah, well, you know, and that brings us to it reminds me of something we were talking about earlier. So I don't really play games on a system. We have an mm-hmm. old Wii. I don't really even play games on my phone because my phone is old and I can't really fit anything on it,
right?
Put this on Facebook and everything that you know, my son wants to get the new Skylanders game for Christmas, and this episode may end up airing after Christmas, but they do not make it for the Wii. They finally were like, hey man, that system is 10 years old. We are not making this game, or older. I don't know how old the Wii is. It's got to be at least 10
years. So you're
going
to go get the Nintendo Classic for him?
No. I might get that for myself.
Right?
Yeah, if you can find them, I think they're sold out of them.
They totally underproduce those. They did not expect the demand that they got.
Yeah, we're probably going to end up going with the PlayStation because the feedback that I got. Well, the feedback that I got is this: they're very similar machines in terms of like, you know, specs and all that kind of stuff. Like, so the one thing I got was like, look, if it's got the games you want, then you really can't go wrong either way.
Right.
It's fine either way.
It's interesting that you, just when you said that you were leaning heavily towards getting the PlayStation 4, I got a text from Peter Aurelian saying he's never going to be on the show again.
Oh, we got to talk Peter Arulian too. We got to get what anyway. That's some exciting news about him too. But no, he does work for Xbox. So yes, but we're probably going to go PlayStation because that was most people that I asked. That was where they sort of fell. Was that PlayStation's this sort of cycle in terms of the consoles. You know, the games are better. There's more kid focused games too. That was sort of
PlayStation. Yeah.
Yeah. Than Xbox.
That makes sense.
Just overall, it was just kind of like, that seems to be the better choice. And when I asked my students at school, they were like, oh, PlayStation. Oh,
so it's interesting that I've talked before about the evolution of my own console gaming. Cause I had a Tandy Color Computer 2 that I played games on many moons ago. I also did ColecoVision and Commodore 64. I had the Atari 2600. I had the Nintendo Entertainment System. I had the Sega Genesis, and then the Sega 64-bit. It was all, you could add things to it. So there was like a CD drive that you could play CD games on. There was this cartridge thing that went in the cartridge slot that took it to 64, I think. So, you know, I had that whole thing. I had the first Sony PlayStation, which I loved. That was one of my favorite consoles. That's what brought me to like games like Abe's Odyssey and Oddworld. Mm-hmm. A couple of my favorite games to this day. And then, you know, I didn't have anything for a long time. And when I finally made the jump, I made the jump to the Xbox 360.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a ton of Xbox 360 games. What would potentially make me jump into one of the newer systems would be if I could play all those games, right? Mm-hmm. And still continue to play those games on the new system. And the Xbox One doesn't have, and I know that people are going to correct me now, and that's fine. I want to be educated. But the last time I checked, Xbox One did not have backwards compatibility to a lot of the 360 games that I have.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of, it's almost like starting fresh for me. Now you are starting completely fresh. You don't have any kind of hindrances or encumbrances. You can just start fresh and go. One thing I will say, the last couple of weeks, since we're in Star Wars mode, I picked up a long, long time ago, a couple of Star Wars games, and they're the only Star Wars games I have for Xbox 360. And one of them is The Force Unleashed.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been playing that one. And I don't know if you're familiar with that. That was the original attempt to bridge the clone, the Revenge of the Sith kind of prequel movies to the Star Wars movies that we grew up with.
Uh-huh.
And it's where Vader is, he takes on an apprentice. So it starts off with him hunting Jedi and killing them. And he finds a young boy after he kills the Jedi. He finds a boy that had been taken as a Padawan. And he takes that boy and raises him as his own Padawan and his own apprentice.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that came out like right when we started the podcast, because I feel like I got the novelization,
Yeah. So and that was when they did. That was when they were first doing like full on. They essentially hired an actor, and they completely rendered him as the Jedi, because he's an actor. You can see him in movies and stuff, and he was the face, the body, the voice, everything of this character.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it is going back to Star Wars Rebels. He actually helps build the Rebel Alliance.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's
in
cool.
The game. He seeks out Princess Leia, who's a character in the game, to help her, and he seeks out an old Jedi general who is helping build the Rebel Alliance, because essentially Vader's like, you have to go out and you have to help me destroy the Emperor, and you're going to do that by building this Rebel Alliance.
That is very cool.
So I've been playing that game here lately.
Yeah, well, you know, two things. First of all, you brought up our friend Peter Arulian, and that he works for Xbox. And I don't know if you saw this. I did tweet it. I feel like he hasn't pushed it. I actually found this out on one of the metal news sites that I listed. I haven't seen any of the publishing sites talk about this yet. But Peter, and I know I can say it because it was on one of the news sites, so it's not a secret. He is going to be writing the novelization of the story that is part of the most recent Dream Theater album.
Nice.
So Dream Theater, as they've done before, has a concept album out that came out in the over the course of the past year. And it's a double album that tells one big story. And Peter is writing the novelization of that. And it's funny because months ago, now Peter, as our listeners may or may not know, is a very good metal singer.
Oh,
He actually has a career doing that, where he did some tours in Europe as the singer of some of these European power metal bands, and Fifth Angel he did a tour with, or a couple shows with at least, anyway. And Peter sings in that style of James LaBrie from Dream Theater and Jeff Tate from Queensryche, and he's a big fan of all that stuff. So Peter posts about that stuff all the time anyway. But I started noticing that it's like, here's me backstage with the Dream Theater guys.
I saw a lot of that too, yeah.
Yeah, and then I messaged him. I'm like, are you writing the novelization of Bless That? And he just sort of wrote me back like, I don't know. So I kind of knew a while ago that he didn't say he was, because I'm sure he's under some sort of NDA until it came out. But he just said like, no, what makes you think that? Like, he's very cagey about it. So congratulations to Peter, because I know that's like his two loves coming together.
Yeah, our listeners can't see the video, but there was a lot of pictures of Peter on Facebook like this.
Yes, with the devil's horns.
Yes. and the tongue sticking out. He's backstage. He's like,
yeah. And I think that happened. I think Peter got that gig, you know, of course, because he's a great writer and a metal fan and all that. But I think he sent his books to the Dream Theater guys, and the Dream Theater guys loved his books. So they were like, yeah, let's get this dude to do it. So
and somewhere Kevin G. Anderson is sitting there going, I sense a disturbance in the force.
Yes. Well, I was like, oh, yeah, I'm surprised Kevin J. Anderson didn't get that. I'm sure there was a lot of jockeying for that, but I think Peter's the man for that one.
He is. He's a huge fan, so that's gonna be good for him.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm excited for him. And
so we'll congrats, Peter.
Yes, and when the book comes out, we'll definitely have to get Peter to come and talk about that, and maybe Peter can get some of the Dream Theater guys to come on the show too. That would be cool.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah,
I don't know. And give us a little music to play too. That'd be
cool. Yeah.
You know, so I've gotten word that my book is going into print.
Ooh, congratulations!
Yeah, so that's kind of awesome. Hopefully, we'll get you a e-arc here soon, John, so you can check it out, because you did lay out that until it was officially sent to you by a publisher, you weren't going to fucking read it. So,
you know what? More than that, it needs to be on Goodreads. It needs to show up on Goodreads so it can count as one of the books that I read for the year.
Yeah.
So just that you could. It doesn't matter if it's by a publisher or not. It just has to be on Goodreads. So if it's on Goodreads, it's okay. I'll read
it. So what's cool is, so that's coming out. I'm going into promotion mode for a
second. That's okay.
So I got that coming out. And then Upside Down, Inverted Tropes, is out from Apex by the time this episode goes live. And I have a nonfiction piece in that.
Cool.
That is actually the lead nonfiction piece. So it's the very first one, I think, that you read in the book.
Cool.
So you read all the cool short fiction pieces, and then when you start getting into the essays, mine's one of the first ones. So that's coming out. I've been invited, I think I can say this, I've been invited to teach at Superstars of Writing.
Ooh.
With Kevin J. Anderson and Jim Butcher and a bunch of other people.
Oh, who?
Yeah, I know, right?
Those lightweights?
Yeah. and then I'm also teaching a full afternoon at the Pikes Peak Writers. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be teaching an afternoon class there in April. So it's like February is Superstars, April is Pikes Peak Writers. So if you want to learn Scrivener, those are your opportunities to learn Scrivener. I'm going to do something completely different for Superstars than I'm doing for Pikes Peak Writers. But I'm also... it's kind of funny, John. I went into Micro Center. Do you have Micro Center?
No, I don't know what that is.
Okay, so Micro Center is this Nerdvana. It's a place where nerds go to have orgasms.
Okay. There's probably other places too, but
yeah.
Anyway.
But this is. I mean, you go in there and you're just like, oh. It's all computer stuff and technology stuff, and you can, you know, they've got a ton of crap in there, and this is where you go to buy essentially if you wanted to build a computer, you could build a computer there.
Okay.
If you want to buy a computer, you can buy a computer there. If you want to do add-on, whatever you wanted, you could do to your computers. They also have televisions, like the big smart TVs and all that kind of crap, and they have all the stuff to connect everything together. So it really is nerd paradise.
Cool.
And I went in there specifically to get what I was calling a piece of shit Windows box so that I could install Scrivener for Windows.
Mm-hmm.
And be able to play around with that so that when I teach Scrivener, I don't have to keep going, oh, you have Windows? I'm so sorry.
Mm. Right. You want to be able to show them how to use it on Windows.
Yeah. See, the thing with Scrivener is Scrivener was developed for Mac.
Right.
And then they have a separate development track and a separate developer that's creating the Windows version. So they're taking the best elements of the Mac version and they're putting them into the Windows version, but they are different.
Mm-hmm.
And so that tends to cause people some issues because they're like, well, I don't have a Mac.
Right.
And when I tell them go buy one, they don't like that.
I know. What's the problem?
I don't know. Seriously. It's weird.
Yeah. Well, look at you and your writing career.
Trying
happening here. No, it's this is how these things are, but I'm so happy for you that your novel's coming out, all this, you know, teaching stuff is happening.
Every overnight success has 10 years of work behind it.
Yeah. Well, I told you when we started this podcast, I'm like, look, just hang out with me and it's gonna happen for you. And look.
Yeah, there you go.
All this I think it's interesting the arc of things, you know, because I think things are really starting to kick into place for you, and I'm sure that's not always the way you feel about it, but just reciting what you just did, that's pretty cool. I think a lot of writers would be envious of where you're at right now, so I think that's really cool. And I think, like, I do know music at this point, so that's and happy about it, and happy about, like, not doing much, you know. not that I've forsaken music. I just have kind of forsaken trying to have a career with it. And I feel like I'm a much more pleasant person to be around.
Have you considered, like, going on Dancing with the Stars?
I might. I had that, you know, that swing dancing phase of my life, which I don't know if I ever told you about. I feel like that must have come up over the many years that we've done this show, that I went through a swing dancing phase where I used to go into.
Were you a fan of the Cherry Pop and Daddies?
I didn't like them as much as I like Brian Setzer. Brian Setzer was.
Bam!
I loved his version of that stuff, and he, of course, he had the hit, the Jump Jive and Whale, which was an old, mm-hmm. was a Louis Prima. I think it was a Louis Prima song. But you know, being a guitar player, I think I really liked that because even though he had this big band, you know, he's
still
ripping
around.
On
I
guitar.
Mean, he does the Christmas
right
now too. He put out a Christmas album with that band.
Uh huh.
And a lot of times during the holidays, he's traveling doing his Christmas album.
Yeah, I think he makes a living just doing that every year, just doing the Christmas stuff. And I'm sure he does other stuff still too. But yeah, I love that stuff. And I should break those albums out again.
Jump and jive, and well, you gotta jump and jive, and well, you gotta jump and jive, and well, you gotta jump and jive. I remember that song.
Yeah, no, it was, and I don't know if it was like this everywhere, but in the tri-state area here, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut.
There's definitely,
That became a thing where those there was a place called the Supper Club in New York where they had an 18-piece big band that played from like 8 or 9 till about 11. And then at midnight, like a smaller band would go on and play till 4 in the morning.
Wow.
And I used to go in and I'd go and I actually took dance classes and like learned how to do those dances. And it was a great time. It worked for me in my younger single days because it was not – well, I'll tell you why I really liked it, because if you were a younger person and looking to meet people and potential dates and girlfriends and things like that – it was great because it was very formal. It wasn't like, hey, baby, let me buy you a drink. It was like, would you like to dance?
Did it hurt when you fell from heaven?
Yeah. Yeah. You didn't have to do any of it. What was great was that there was this built-in, you know, where you can ask somebody to dance, and if they said no, they could just be polite about it. They were just like, oh, I don't feel like dancing now. And it's like, okay, that's cool. Like, it wasn't any weird, like, crush of your ego. It was just, you can ask somebody to dance, and if they wanted to, they would dance, and if they didn't, they didn't have to. And what was great was, because not that many dudes actually learned how to do the dancing, most most people there just wanted to dance.
Right? Yeah.
It's not like these all blossomed into romances for me, but it was just really fun to dance. I really got into the – it's about the dance, Patrick.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it was about. It's about the grammar, the grammar rodeo. Sorry. anyway, it was a good time, but I saw some great bands through that. And how did we get on to swing dancing? Oh, you were saying Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah. But, so the I actually got into a lot of that music at the time because I was already enjoying before that the sort of the resurgence of that sort of crooner type.
Yeah,
music that came with like When Harry Met Sally.
Mm-hmm.
You had Harry Connick Jr. came back and or not came back, but like it launched his career, and mm-hmm. he was doing a lot of that kind of stuff, which now, you know, Michael Bublé has taken on.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people call him Bublé, but come on, it's my Bublé.
Wife loves him.
I know, yeah. My mom does too.
He does sing really well.
You he have to does, give him, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I hear you. No, it's all good stuff. But you know, that music, it's great this time, you know, because we listen to Light FM here in the car with my son. That's what we listen to. And it's like all Christmas music. But what the great thing about having all Christmas music is it's all stuff of that era.
Mm-hmm.
You hear like lots of old, like big band arrangements. And, you know, even though you heard those songs a million times, they're great tunes. They're great arrangements. Yeah. You hear all the horns. So to me, like, I never have a problem. I know people complain about Christmas music, but to me, it's like, hey, man, you got 18 pieces. All the horns and, you know, really well-crafted songs put together. Like, I'm fine with that. We can listen to that all day in the car. It's okay by me. It's, you know, when they sort of lean towards the more, you know, poppy stuff that came later that I lose it a little bit.
Yeah.
But that, you that, want to play me Andy Williams and Johnny Mathis and all that kind of stuff. I'm down with that. It's fine by me.
Yeah, that's great music. And that reminds me of something else that and I may talk about this on another episode. I don't know. One of the shows that someone has talked me into watching. Have you ever had that experience where there's a show that you would never watch mm-hmm. on your own, but someone gets you to watch it, and then you go, oh, wow, I really like this.
Sure. Lots of times, yeah.
Mozart in the Jungle.
Oh, yeah. My wife and I have been watching that. We're like halfway through season two,
I think. Just finished season two because season three came out yesterday.
Yes, I knew that season three is that because we're way behind. We're way behind because we watched the first season all in one shot. And then season two came out, and we watched the first couple episodes, and we haven't gotten back to it in a while for whatever reason.
It's a really good show, and the music is awesome. And by the way, there are Spotify playlists that there's an official one that mm-hmm. it's like the soundtrack, and then there's some unofficial ones. But it's essentially the music from Mozart in the Jungle. And I do, every time I think of Mozart in the Jungle, I also think of Rumble in the Jungle.
See, I think of Welcome to the
in the Jungle.
See, I do the opposite. I sing Mozart in the Jungle. We got fun and games. That's what I, every time we hear that show, that's what I want to hear is the theme song, but we don't. But no, it's a good show. And being someone who went to like a classical music college, yeah, it's a little like, you know, there's not quite that much, you know, sex and drugs and rock and roll, but there's a little bit of that. And
it's based on a book called Sex, Drugs, and Classical Music.
Yes, I'm aware of that. Yeah. And I don't know. It's not that far off. Like, I know a lot of musicians like that, and it's, these are very good looking people and it's all that, but it is a TV show. But once you get past that, not so far off with some of the characterizations of some of these characters. So it's,
I did like, the oboe player, Hi-Li.
Yes.
She's an oboe player, and someone tries to get her to smoke pot, and she's like, oh, no, I can't because of the oboe. You know, I got to keep the lung clear to be able to play the oboe.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I never even thought of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, anyway,
But like the drummer dude's like, here, take some pills and have this and smoke mm-hmm. this and blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, anyway,
it's a great show. It's an interesting show, and it's got a lot of great characters, a lot of actors in it that I like, and actresses,
mm-hmm.
And the music is amazing. So I definitely think people should watch that.
I second that. All right, everybody. Well, that was a nice random show for you, but that's how the Just the Two of Us go. So hopefully you found some cool stuff to go check out. Well, have a great week, everybody, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks, Mo.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?
I'm the one in the middle.